Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. What page it is? So 18, right? Okay, chapter 12, The Perfect Society, Four Spiritual Classes. Right, so now we've done the social classes before in the varnas, now it'll be the ashramas. Right? Pratigya. A civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization, right? So that's the whole point of ashram, because we see is brahmachari, vanaprastha, then there's restriction, then grihastha, then there's mixing, but even that has its limitations, right? Because that's where, why would this come up? Because the whole point is why are we in the material world? Because of our attachment to the field. Right, of activities. And so, basically speaking, the feminine nature represents most clearly the field of activities. You understand? So that's the whole point. Men want to enjoy women, women want to be enjoyed. Huh, you're back. He's got stripes on the legs. Your friend back there is... Always willing to give a helping hand. Okay.
No, don't stop being.
Okay. Does that make sense? So that's what the whole thing's about. This combination of the masculine and feminine is what either creates an upliftment within the material world or a degradation in the material world. Otherwise, just men on their own, women on their own, it's not going to be much of a problem. It's only when there's trying the enjoyment of the feminine nature, that's when then the entanglement comes. But those same things connected to Krishna, then that uplifts you, as we see with Priyavrata, right? So he's a Paramahamsa, then his interaction with his wife doesn't create any problem, right? Because he sees it all connected to Krishna. So that's why... Unrestricted means however you like. So restriction means that there's rules, you follow it properly and all that. Right? It doesn't mean that there's a wide variety of things that can't be done. It's just a matter of how that's done, what's the consciousness, that's the main thing. That's what then defines. So that's the whole purpose. That's what makes it spiritual. So your occupation is then focused and your ashram is focused. You focus these two, then you can uplift yourself. Right? So, okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter particularly describes the brahmachari and the person in the vanaprastha stage. It also gives a general description of the four ashrams, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. In the previous chapter, the great sage Narad Muni has described the varna institution of society. And now, in this chapter, he will describe the stages of spiritual advancement in the four ashramas. Right? So we generally will take it that, okay, Brahman's the most... the highest, but no, it's actually the ashrams are the principle. Because that's where the spiritual advancement is. Does that make sense? That's the position. So the ashrams, four ashrams, that's a brahminical position. Right? Not having the ashrams, that's shudra. Just having one. Right? Shudra is grihastha the whole life. Right? Grihastha generally means with the wife, but as it pointed out, Lord Chaitanya, after his first wife died, then he's still a grihastha. It's not that your wife dies, you become a brahmachari. Right? So, but now it's more proper that a grihastha has a wife, therefore he remarried. Does that make sense? So this idea is only when you're married, then you're a grihastha. No, grihastha is a mentality. So those who grow up in family life and stay there, they're grihastha. So a child before going to the gurukul technically is a grihastha. Just a little too young for the whole thing. Then they go to gurukul, then they become brahmacharis. Then after that, then they graduate, then they get married, then they become properly situated, fully situated grihasthas. Alright? Then vanaprastha is retired, then sannyat like this. Is that what it says? Yeah. Yes.
So for women, would you say that there's only two ashrams?
And what would the two be?
Grihastha and vanaprastha.
In one sense, yes, you could say, because then when they're not married, then there generally is training for being married. Or if they're not married and don't want to get married, then they're training for vanaprastha. So we will say that in that stage they would be brahmacharinis, like that. So in that way we'll say three. But the point is that basically for most it's not. No, there's no brahmacharini ashram because they would live at home. Because most girls would be interested in getting married, but there would be a few who wouldn't. So then they would just, instead of getting married, they just move into vanaprastha, like Gargi and some of the others like that. So you do have examples of it. It's rare, but you do have examples of it. So the point is that how do you say? Oh, he's gone. There's a balance. Going back to the others, there's a balance between the aspects of freedom and equality. Right? Because these are the two political positions that are taken in society. Freedom means you can do whatever you like, but then that's generally taken by those who are qualified on the material platform and can actually be successful. So they want the freedom to go about making, you know, their profit, their you know, material development. So they need less control. Right? Then those who are into equality, they're the ones who are into control. Because if you want to make everybody equal, then you have to control it because it's not equal. Right? So people aren't equal. No one's the same. We're saying everybody's a unique individual, but we want equality, meaning they're all the same, so only the same opportunities are available. Well, those into the freedom, then you have the thing is that, no, anybody could do it, though they may be restrictive on allowing everybody doing it, but technically everybody could do it. Does that make sense? So then the difficulty comes up is that to get the balance of this is that one has one's freedom, but there's restrictions given by the Lord, right? And then for everyone being equal, there is the point of equal opportunity. Equalness means everybody who has the nature can do it, but if you don't have the nature, you can't do it. On the political sense, equal means even you can't do it, you're given the opportunity because everyone's equal.
What is the connection with the ashram?
Because it hears that if the girl could do it, she can. But it's not artificial. In other words, Gargi doesn't impose any of the feminine aspects of possession on anybody else. So she's taking the renounced position and can move about freely, but she does not implicate anybody in her sense of feminine possessiveness. But if someone says, no, we're free, we're not this body, and so therefore we can do everything, and then they impose their feminine possessiveness on everybody and try to control everybody, because if you're talking freedom, there's no control. You understand? That's why I was saying it's political. That's why we brought it up. Because these are the two political positions, freedom or equality. You understand? And so therefore, they're talking freedom, but it's not actually free. they have all the restrictions of the equality. You know, we're free to do everything and everyone's equal. That means you have to deal in this way. So in other words, for yourself there's freedom, for everybody else there's equality. That's cheating. It's not a philosophy, it's not even a political stance. It's just self-centered. So it doesn't actually get above pranamoy. But because it includes other people and all that, it gets to a low level of pranamoy. But it's not actually a very elevated position of pranamoy. Does that make sense? So, therefore, girl by nature, if she is interested in getting married in that, she spends the time developing the qualifications so that when she's married, she can actually run a household quite nicely. Like that. If she's not, then she can focus just on the sadhana and this and that, and if she can get by with that, then somehow or another, and handle the social environment that's going on, then it go. You can say, oh, but there's all the stigma, no one will deal nicely and all that. In 11th canto, there's the Avantipur Brahman. So the Avantipur Brahman takes sannyas. How are they dealing with him? Right? He goes around, he begs, he collects his food while he's saying his prayers. All the local punk village boys come and pee on his food. They harass him, they steal his danda. They just make his life miserable. Then we'll just say, you know, yes, you know, he's got to tolerate and this and that and stuff like that, and it's a material world and all that. Now imagine if that was a girl. Oh, this is, you know, this is this and that, and, you know, male chauvinism, this, that, blah. What happened to the equality? You know, in other words, we can treat men like dirt, why can't we treat women like dirt? You know, and if we're supposed to deal nicely with the women, we're supposed to deal nicely with the men. Therefore, since the men don't understand the possessiveness, you're not supposed to apply it. That's equality. You understand? That's equal nature. That you're expecting them to come up to the feminine level, and that but the men can't expect the women to come up to their level. So this is just a political mishmash that's totally self-centered. It's not to do with reality. Therefore, the Vedic system is, since and most girls are that, therefore they do, just like most boys will get married. Right? So it's generally only if there's a brahminical nature, then they're the ones that may or may not. So generally, the boys, they could or could not. It's up to them. The girls, generally they would, but if anybody didn't, any girl didn't, generally they would be brahminical. So you do have it. It can happen. Does that make sense? So in that way, you would take, so just for generic, then you would say you have before, you know, your celibate student life, then you have married life, and then you have retired. So then with the girls, you'd have exactly the same. Just the focus is slightly different. So the girls are learning how to refine and use that possessiveness, while the boys are taken out of that environment so that they're not exposed to it at all in the Gurukul. So that they can actually learn who they are. Because if you have a boy and you're applying the feminine possessiveness, how will he ever figure out who he is? Because he's only, you know, his, you know, mommy's boy. But who is he? He doesn't know. Only when you get in the Gurukul, then you're separated from that, then the boy can actually figure out who he is. Then he can be a proper Grihastha, that he will act as, you know, his mother's son and his wife's like this, but at the same time he does have an identity. That's the Vedic system. Well, the girl doesn't need that separate identity. Right? Because she's the center of attention anyway. So. So in other words, how to gracefully and piously be the center of attention. That's why it says here, there's no unrestricted time spent with women. Right? Because it's all about the woman. So unless the woman's trained and the man's trained, they won't know how to use that time properly. Otherwise, the guy's trying to exploit the feminine nature, the girl's trying to exploit the feminine nature. They're both exploiting. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the... Yes. Grihastha is?
Is a mentality,
yes.
Please explain
Mentality means it's about your facilities and everything for yourself, for your happiness. In other words, when your facilities are for what's going to make you happy, or those connected with you, you know, either directly or extended. That's Grihastha life. Brahmachari means he has to be working. It's not his. He's working for the spiritual master. Vanaprastha is about the opposite. You're trying to be detached from all those things you're attached to. You make an effort to be detached from those. Oh. You understand? Like that. So, yeah. Okay. Yes.
But for a woman, when she's married, then it's the same as, you know, the vivaha is the same as getting upanayana.
Yes.
So wouldn't it be not about the woman's facility and, you know, her, you know, it's about, you know, serving the husband in that kind of like a
brahmacharya. Means that's her mentality, yes. But the point is in that, if it comes down between his and hers, he has to be considered of hers.
Oh, okay.
Right? Just like she's considered of his, but in the way it works is that he's got to be considered of hers first, then she'll reciprocate that. Mm-hmm. Right? If the man's considered the woman's always considered the man. If the man's not considered the woman, after a few years, she's not considered the man. Hence, track suits and very dumpy t-shirts. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
They're directly connected. So the point is the masculine is taking the first step. And then that's being reciprocated by the feminine. But that first step is taken based on the nature of the feminine. So it's very simple, but it's very, very sophisticated, very complex. So it's unlimited. So the moment to moment, how it's adjusting, it's constantly adjusting. So this idea is, oh, you figured out a few tricks. You know, they say men are from Pluto and Venus are from somewhere else, and like this. Okay. So those things like that, they show tricks. And people read that and they try the tricks and they do work because they do address the observation of the feminine nature. But the point is they're not dynamic. And so therefore, when the situation's adjusted slightly, you're still applying the same trick. And then the girl figures out it's a trick. It's not real. And so then everything falls apart again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we say, oh, this book's useless. No, the guy's useless. The book is also useless, but the guy's useless.
The book makes money.
The book makes money. So at least the guy who wrote the book, his wife is getting some benefit. Like that. You understand? But if someone can catch, if someone has the association and stuff, and therefore can see these in context of these higher principles, then they can apply it. But if they think they stand on their own, then they won't be able to apply it. They'll fail. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, yes, it is equal, but there is a masculine-feminine dynamic. That's the whole thing. There is a difference. They're the same, but they're different. Just like Krishna, him and his energies are the same, but they're different. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who blew the flute, and then the gopis came?
Krishna.
Right? So, and he would be in the masculine or feminine position?
Masculine?
Yes. You understand? Then he's with the cowherd boys, and he sneaks off like that when they're playing, you know, Balaram's taking that, and he sneaks off and goes to Radhakund like that. The gopis are already there, but the point is then he goes there, and so that initiates the interaction. You understand? So in other words, the masculine introduces the interaction, but the interaction that is introduced has to be based on the mood of the feminine at the time. And then how she responds to that, then you adjust and deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's dynamic, but someone has to start it, just like you have the perpetual motion machine, but somebody has to start the motion in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the masculine business. that make sense? Feminine can do it for a moment to get it started so that the masculine does work, but it has to be it's working after that. But if it doesn't start, then it won't work. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, in other words, we can see the difference. We see what's same, but we see what's different. So we know how this applies to both. Because whenever it says about the soul and their conditioning, it says he, that means both. You understand? Because he means who has the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Like that. And that's all conditioned living entities. So that's talking about everybody. When it's talking about social things, then it will make a distinction there. Okay, who's taking the masculine role, who's taking the feminine? So, yeah. Yes?
Maharaj, how to reduce the possessiveness nature?
But it's not a matter of reducing the possessive nature, it's a matter of engaging it. Means if everything that you have the possessive nature over is engaged in Krishna's service, then what's the problem? Because over-possessive means it's not about Krishna. Right? In other words, one's trying to squeeze something from it that's not there. So in other words, you apply the possessiveness and whatever comes from that, you're satisfied. But if one's not satisfied, one keeps squeezing, that's when people say one's too possessive. Understand? Because it's lacking the Krishna consciousness. If one's conscious about pleasing Krishna, not about pleasing yourself, but it's the areas that you like to work in, then there's no problem in engaging the feminine control. But you have to know where it applies. Right? Because the nature is there. Where can you apply that? Where don't you apply that? That makes sense. So in the home scene, then that's applied more. And in the public scene, depends. If it's more of a social event, there can be a little bit more, but not to bump into everybody else's, like that. But if it's a generic, like a bus stand or an airport, then basically you use zero, like that. You know, except for telling the husband to hurry up with all the luggage. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. In this chapter, he will describe the stages of spiritual advancement in the four ashrams, which are known as brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Right? A brahmacharya, so we'll get into this whole mentality of sannyas in these later chapters, because after this, there's three chapters, it's actually talking about the perfect society and everything like that. So the ultimate point is everybody has the mentality of sannyas, means it's for Krishna, it's not for me. But as far as duties go, what one will perform, you perform within these ashrams and within the varnas. But the mentality of sannyas, in other words, the whole system is to get one to the sannyas mentality. It's not about the sannyas platform, it's about the sannyas mentality. So whenever one can develop that, then that's what one should do, and that should then go on in one's life. So that's what the purpose is for. So technically, the Vedic system, everybody would be sannyas by mentality. And because of that, that's why the Varnashram system itself works so nicely, because everybody is just doing what they're supposed to do to please Krishna.
So Maharaj, then, could you say that if you had like a very conscientious grihastha family where everyone was working on trying to develop that mentality collectively and only meditating on the... obeying orders of spiritual matters quite a success, then you have a
They would be the best. So the duties of the husband, duties of the wife, duties of the kids, everything would work very smoothly because it's all for Krishna. It's when we add in what we want to get from that, that's when the problem starts. Right? You understand? So that's the problem starts. The brahmachari should live under the care of the true spiritual master, giving him sincere respect and obeisance. So true means true spiritual, not just he's the teacher and we call him spiritual master, but actually he's connected with the proper sampradaya and everything like that. Giving him sincere respect and obeisances, acting as his menial servant, always carrying out his order. Right? Because you're practicing the idea of how you would deal with Krishna. So with Krishna, you would do everything to please Krishna. So here you're doing everything to try to please the spiritual master. One could say, oh no, but you know, this is not proper. Why could one be more senior to the others? This is the political position of equality, like we mentioned. Right? So therefore, we restrict the spiritual master. Do we restrict the student? No. So it's not that the student should do all these things and the spiritual master should also be restricted. No, we restrict authority and we give freedom to those who are not in authority. So it's actually it's an upside down system. But it sounds really nice. You understand? Okay. The brahmachari should engage himself in spiritual activities and study the Vedic literature under the direction of the spiritual master. According to the brahmacharya system, he should dress with a belt, deerskin, and matted hair, and should bear a danda, water pot, and sacred thread. He should collect alms daily in the morning, and in the evening, whatever alms he has collected, he should offer to the spiritual master. Brahmachari should accept prasad upon the order of the spiritual master. If the spiritual master sometimes forgets to order the disciple to eat, the disciple should not take prasad on his own initiative. Rather, he should fast. Right? In other words, you're working under authority. Because if you can do that, then here, if you cannot eat because you haven't been sanctioned to eat, then that means when the shastra says something you should do or not do, you can follow it. We can say, oh, this is not proper, but there's so many things. We can say here, because eating is, you know, this and that, but are we looking at it from the point of the rules and regulations? Right? Because if you check how much brahmacharis eat, they eat once in a day. Technically, for anybody else, it's about food for 3 days. Right? You know, so they're not going to starve. You don't have to worry. Right? You know, when we were talking before, the brahmachari is about the half bucket of halava. That's not actually an exaggeration. You know, that's kind of like, you know, pretty standard.
Somebody's a full bucket.
Huh? Yeah, I didn't want to scare anybody with a full bucket. You know, so that's why I said half bucket. And that's why everybody thought it was funny. Right? You know, yeah, half a bucket. Yeah, that's okay. You know, that's like an individual, that's a one shot, you know. Nothing to put away in the locker, right?
The appetizer.
That's what before we start the meal. Remember, our temple was, because they'd eat so much sweets and all that, then the temple president made a rule, you had to eat 2 full plates of sabji before you could start on the sweets. Otherwise, the brahmachari would just go straight for the sweets. But that didn't stop anybody. Yeah, you just ate 2 plates of sabji, and then you ate this. There's 5 bowls of sweet rice. You know, that's not these little ones. There's a big, you know, like, I don't know what would go in it. A bowl that big, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a good amount. You know, it's some, you know, like 1.5 liters of sweet rice, and then, you know, how many? Yeah, laglus, there's a limited amount, you know, like that. Ladus generally get a lot of those. I remember eating 15 of those after that. Like that. I think that was the last time I ate that many.
That's why you remember that.
Yeah, that's why you remember. I had a lasting impression. Okay. So the point is the brahmacharis learning that unless it's authorized, you don't engage the senses. Right? It's a very simple, straightforward way. Nothing's getting in the way. You know, except for the call of the halava. It's just sitting there calling you. You know. But the whole point is if you can't do that, how will you be able to, as a grihastha, that there's so many opportunities to engage the senses, but some are authorized, some are not. How do you control yourself? That's the whole point. That's what's missed. So in this thing of equality and being nice and all that, basically everyone goes to hell. Because everyone's going to hell together, no one notices. Right? You know, it's a party. Yeah, it's a party. Yeah. So that's why it's there. Though generally we don't use it. Prabhupada specifically said we don't use this one. But this is the principle. In other words, the principle is you don't do something unless it's authorized. And it's not that says something happened once, it's eternal. No, it's every time. Right? What's the other point of this? Now, okay, you know that each time it's authorized, that means then you've done something in a situation, you've gotten the benefit, then the next situation, again, it's up to authority and then benefit. Right? Okay. So, who will have this particular problem? The one who went to Gurukul or the one who didn't go to Gurukul? That he does something nice for the wife and then expects to get eternal benefit from that. The one who didn't go to Gurukul. Right? Because he thinks, I do something, it lasts eternally. No, he does, I did something and it lasted that much. Then he knows each time, each interaction, then you have to do it properly. See? These are the benefits of the Vedic system. We don't understand it. Why? Because we apply the modern social system to it, and we don't even understand the modern social system. Does that make sense?
There's an argument, however, that if brahmacharis always follow the authorities, how will they think for themselves?
Because they learn what to do. And so once they become mature, now they can be in the position to guide others. One who has been guided can guide. One who's never been guided, he doesn't know how to guide. So in other words, the only person that would say that is someone who never had direction. But they come to an age of maturity that by modern society you consider them older or mature, and so they want the position of authority, though they don't actually have the qualification. So because they haven't done that, then they're trying to get by, we're all equal, it's by age, then we're here. But the point is someone, it's just like, let's say the baby is totally taken care of by the parents. Okay? Now when they grow up, how will they do with babies? They'll take care. Now they're neglected as a child. When they grow up, can they take care of children? No. So that's what's understood. It's a mirror effect. If you've been taught, you can teach. You followed, you can lead. You know, that's the whole thing. Is that that's why the system is there. But because that's not there in the modern system, which is basically just a blasé kind of grihastha environment. Not too extreme, not too this, not too that. Therefore, then it's not understood. You know, if you grew up your whole life eating oatmeal, you don't understand variety. You just don't know. So that's the whole thing. And that's equality. It's all oatmeal. Okay. So we see it's the ritual. Why do we get? Because we see the secondary. What's the primary? What's the substance? What's Krishna? What are the qualities? We're saying the external. What does it take to fast? You have to have certain qualifications to be able to do that. That's the whole point. The brahmacharya should be trained to be satisfied with eating what is absolutely necessary, right? So he starts off with a brahmachari always eats what's absolutely necessary. It's just a matter of whether it's what's absolutely necessary for himself or for 10 people. So with time, he works it out down to 9, 8, 7, until finally he gets down to just what one person requires. Yes, then that's sannyas. Yes, that's a time when then he takes sannyas. Yes. Yes.
30 years.
Yeah, I mean it takes a while to get it. From, you know, we're not talking about overnight from 10 to 1. He should be very expert in executing responsibilities. So that means he knows all these things, technicalities, very well, like that. And he should be faithful. And he should control his senses and try to avoid the association of women as far as possible. Okay, now one will say, oh, but this is so restrictive. Okay, let us put this into the light of grihastha life. Okay, the brahmachari should be trained to be satisfied with eating what is absolutely necessary. Okay, how much does the wife cook?
what's absolutely necessary.
What's absolutely necessary. So then so therefore he should be able to be satisfied with that. Otherwise it's going to be such a shock. You go from half a bucket of halva into getting, you know, half a spoon. You know, it's like, you know, and you know, we're not even talking about one of those davos, you know, that the Bengalis use for the rice. We're talking about those little nice petite little stainless steel ones. You know, it's kind of like, what's that? There's a bump on my plate here. Yeah. You understand? Okay. So his point is, he won't be satisfied. He should be very expert in executing responsibilities. If the man's not responsible and can't get them done expertly, is the wife going to be ever happy? No. Okay. He should be faithful. Okay, so these guys that can't follow the orders, do whatever they like, move around how they like, then... Yes, we don't have... I'm sure you can all make the connections. He should control his senses. Or can try to avoid the association with women as possible, right? Should he be associating with other women? No. And should he be trying to associate with his wife however he likes, whenever he likes? No. That's what my mother would call men have a one-tracked mind.
She wasn't talking about the other side of the...
No, he was not. She was not. Strangely enough, though.
Huh. It would have been
nice, but... Do they even understand what tracks mean these days?
Tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But it means, because for us it means the radio, they had 8-track tapes. They still have that kind of thing, or they think of it as more of just where you go jogging?
No, they still, it depends on where you grow up in. But yeah, they still have multiple tracks.
Oh, okay. Okay. A brahmachari should very strictly abstain from living with women and should not meet with grihasthas and those too addicted to women. Right? Because if he can stay on his own without women, then that means when he marries a woman, he can just stay with her. Because if he can stay without any women, then staying with one woman is good. But if you've always grown up with so many women, then getting married, then you're used to so many women. Right? Because the boy who grows up in the house only, he becomes very expert at just playing off the different women and getting what he wants. You understand? This is the whole point. Otherwise, how will he be a grihasta? How will he progress? That's the whole point. He won't progress. So therefore, even if you just grow up as a grihasta, then what's the rule? What's your occupation? Right? Shudra. What does a shudra do? They're submissive to their authorities in the workplace. At least in some place they are. And from that they get attached to them because they work for Brahma, Kshatriyas, or Vaishyas. Getting attached to them, then they move up. You understand? So the principle is you have to have this principle of control. That's why it's called the regulative principle of
freedom.
In other words, regulation gives you freedom. That's what's not understood. Right? We think freedom's no regulation, regulation means no freedom. No, regulation is what creates freedom. But nor should a brahmachari speak in a lonely place with a woman. After completing one's education as a brahmachari in this way, one should give dakshin, an offering of gratitude to one's guru, and then one may leave for home and accept the next ashram, the grihastha ashram, or else one may continue in the brahmachari ashram without adulteration. The duties for the... So, means in other words, you finish your training, you can continue as a brahmachari, or you get married. The duties for the grihastha ashram, brahmachari ashram, as well as the duties of sannyasis are prescribed in the shastras. A grihastha is not meant to enjoy sex life without restriction. Indeed, the whole purpose of Vedic life is to become free from sexual indulgence. Right? Because the whole point is sexual indulgence. Why do we call it indulgence? What does indulgence infer?
More
more than necessary. So it's about sense gratification. So it's not saying that grihasthas don't have children. It doesn't mean that grihasthas aren't affectionate with the family members, but it means that it's not about the sense gratification. You understand? That's the important part. Because if it's just about the sense gratification, then it gets old really fast. Right? In other words, in the typical system, as long as something new and different, you know, in other words, how long, in other words, as long as something is new and fresh, that's how long a girl is interested in something. Right? So, if you start this sexual indulgence at an early age, then at what point do they get where it's not new and fresh anymore? About the time they get married. And so is there an interest? No. So that's why in the Vedic system, one doesn't get involved in that because there's better things to do. Right? All the time put on makeup and clothes and shopping, you could be doing other things. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? So everything is pushed to a later point. And then from that, then it works very, very nicely. Does that make sense? So therefore, then the restriction creates a proper interaction. Therefore, then the relationship stays proper. That's the whole idea. That it's a science. People wonder, why isn't family life working? Why don't we? Because they don't follow these things. It's that simple. Otherwise, why are these things there as a basis? Because those things are there as a basis, then it works nicely. So the Vedic system is, you know, grihastha life works nicely for, you know, 25, 30 years. And then it goes into vanaprastha. Right? And in the modern, if you get 3 years, you're doing pretty good. Right? No? Yeah. You know, 6 months, okay, it was a Hollywood wedding, right? Okay. You know, we can understand. It never works, you know, like that. But. Okay. Indeed, the whole purpose of Vedic life is to become free from sexual indulgence, right? Because sexual indulgence means it's about the sense gratification. It's not saying that people don't have children, but it's not about the sense gratification. Right? So we're not talking about the Christian concept of burlap sacks here. We're talking about that it's used for that purpose. Just like we cook for Krishna without sense gratification, also then therefore sexual involvement is also without sense gratification. But everything works out nicely, everything comes out good. You cook for Krishna, then the prasad doesn't taste nice. Yeah. But this is ideas, if we don't cook for Krishna, it'll be better tasting. Is it? No. That's the whole point. You're used to what prasad tastes like. You take something that's not prasad, it has less, even though it's expertly cooked. So that's the whole thing. It's when it's done with restriction for Krishna, there's more in it, actually. So it's just a matter of whether you want pravriti or nivriti. You know, you want happiness and goodness or in passion and ignorance. So it's just a matter of timing. You want now, then you won't have later. You want later, then you restrict now. Then you'll see later it's there. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, when it's mentioned that the goal is to get there,
yes,
that means that it's not starting from there. Because
no, it's not starting from there. It's starting from wherever the individuals are at. So that's why you properly match individuals, then they're basically starting from the same place. You know, so that's why, you know, the lady and the carpenter might not be the ideal place to start. Because you notice he doesn't say, well, we'll be happy together, we'll be this. Well, he just asks about the baby. That makes sense? Yeah. I think it's a Peter and Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, that's why.
That makes sense. You should just start quoting Bach or something. You know, cause at least it's got some classic element to it.
He wasn't much of a lyricist, though.
One of them was, and the other one wasn't. Yeah, maybe they got it from someone else. Okay. Does that make sense? So they start wherever they start, but the whole point is that since Krishna is everything, then the taste that one gets in there, that's actually Krishna. It's not what one's doing. So after a while, one starts to see it's Krishna's more important. Therefore, then you can bring your activities in line with what's pleasing to Krishna. So that's why if there's training properly, the brahmachari, he's controlling nicely, the girl's controlling nicely, then to go from that position out into the environment of sense gratification, but to be able to do that in a controlled way will be easy.
For those who are trained.
Yes. You know, in other words, if you watch no TV, then watching 1 hour a day will be easy. But if all you do is watch television all day, then how are you going to restrict it? You understand? So that's the whole point. So unless one understands these technical points of the philosophy, otherwise everybody's saying them. It's not, it's a man's thing. But, you know, Devaki's saying the prayer, she says that. Bhumi Devi says the prayers. The gopis are saying the prayers. You know, Kunti says the prayers. They all say the same thing, how Krishna is everything. And therefore, how everything should be connected to him. You know what I'm saying? And so then one has to see these things. Some restriction, some consideration. So, okay, you won't restrict because it's Krishna. Will you restrict because of the other person? Are you going to act in such a way the other person is pleased? That's already restriction. And why are you doing it? Because that's what Shastra says. Then there'll be, if it's just I'll do what the other pleases because I'll get more, then, you know, you're a nice guy, but still a gross materialist. But if I have to deal with others because that's how I'm supposed to deal, that's how then you start to get control. And so, you know, you have a few years to be successful. Right? It's not saying within the first 6 months you have to work it out. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that's the whole point. Within the Grihastha ashram, it should be worked out. But it's about the mentality. It's not about volume. It's about the mentality. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because it means by volume, yes, you put too much ghee on the fire, it will go out. But at the same time, if you don't change the mentality, then when there's fire again, then that's just as big as... So it has to be that it's about the mentality. That's the whole thing. Brahmacharya is going through these things to create a mentality. So the Grihastha is only carrying on that same principle. But now applying it into the world, the sense, because until once you know who you are, right, in Sankarshan, right, then Prajumna Adiyudana Vasudeva, then you can apply later. But if you don't know who you are, there's no Sankarshan, how well can it go? People can't figure out who they are. How successful are they? The successful people are successful because they think, I am this. But the ones who are not, we could be anything, we can do anything, we can, so then do something. Well, you know, like that. So they nothing. You understand? So you have to know who you are. Then you can do. So if you can't figure out who you are, then so one to look at it. There is so much attachment. Why? Because I think I'm the controller and enjoyer. You understand? So it all has to come back. One has to be thoughtful. That's the whole point of the Vedic system. If we're trying to get to the point of freedom from sexual indulgence. That means there means something there. Because at the end of Grihastha life, you're not supposed to be having more kids anyway. Ajamil was, but that was Ajamil. Right? So that means you come to that point. And so vanaprast means then one doesn't need that anymore. Or at least one can control it. One has the capacity. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea. Is that you learn to control on the as the individual, then you work on applying that within the greater, with the family, the social, the you know, the broader range of engagement. So the brahmacharya is quite narrow, so you can figure out who he is. Sometimes, oh, why is it so, you know, so little facility? So they can figure out who they are. You give more facility, they can't figure out who they are. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the whole idea. Okay? Okay. All the ashrams are recognized for spiritual progress, and therefore, although Grihastha ashram gives a kind of license for sex life for a certain time, it does not allow unrestricted sex life. Right? So that's the whole point. It's not just with anybody, anywhere, at any time. When it's restricted to one's own partner. And then within that, you have things, you know, you have to work, you have to do, you have sadhana and things. So everything is slowly becomes restricted. So there's no such thing as unrestricted. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, in grihastha life also there is no illicit sex. A grihastha should not accept a woman for sexual enjoyment. Wasting semen is also illicit sex. So it's trying to get to that point. But if you can start at that point, even better. But if not, then one has to get to that point. Right? Yes?
So, a little confusion.
Okay, well that's good. It's only a little bit.
Sort of. So when we take initiation and we take the vows and then the sixth step.
Yes.
Now, when I took initiation, it was sort of very clear technique for procreation.
Yes, but that's what you're trying to get to. No, it's not a matter of now. It means that are grihasthas allowed to have sex with someone other than their spouse? No. And that would be considered illicit sex. Okay? So that you're not supposed to do. Okay? So that's your bottom line. And then the other, that's what you are trying, that's the standard. I say. We may say it's not possible. I remember talking with one Brahmin lady that her last advice when the daughter was leaving the house, you know, after being married, because, you know, marriage is at the house and all that, and then the girl goes with the boy to their house. So the last words of advice she told her daughter says, how you say, I have five children. I have been intimate with your father five times. So, that's the standard. People do follow it. In the Brahminical culture, it is standard because there's so many more things to life. They know how to cook, they know how to eat, they know how to serve, they know how to dress, they know how to keep the house, they know how to socially interact, they have family members, they have relationships. You know, all these unknown things in the modern world. So therefore, there's more to family life than sex. And so when all there is, the only thing you can say is that, okay, they're a couple because they're having sex, then, yeah, of course, it's going to look strange. So that is where you're trying to get to. There are those that start from that point. So that is the standard of the Vedic culture, but we're, you know, much of us are not coming from that background. So the point is minimum, it's not that, you don't get outside of that. But max, I mean, you get up to it just for procreation. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is at least even in the literature, as you go back some time, you know, men and women could kind of be romantic and intimate without actually having sex. You know. Now it's, how you say, it's taken as something very light. You know, cuddling. It's a light thing, you know, like a koala bear, you know. They're cuddly, you know, like that. But before it was part of the romantic environment.
Koalas?
Yes, of course. Before, every good European aristocrat had in a koala bear. He didn't know that one?
No.
That's a, yeah. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's changed. It's just that devotees with means because along with that has to know the science of how you deal with that. Right? One of the, you know, how to control desires, how to see everything connected to Krishna. Then you can control, but that's not being taught. So then it looks like, oh, they're dropping the standard. No, but you teach the thing, then you wherever you are in that array from, okay, you're, you know, just, how you say, by the hair of your teeth, not having sex with anything that moves, and just sticking to your own, you know, husband or wife, up to where, you know, only for procreation. So wherever you fall in between, depending on your background, that's where you start. But if you don't know the science, how will you progress? That's the whole point. So they should be teaching the science rather than dropping the standard, because the standard was always this. But the point is if you don't know what the goal is, how will you get there? But then you have to teach the science so you can get there. So we can say this is the standard because we're teaching what's the science. Then you apply the science wherever you're at in that, you know, what do you call it? That range?
Gradation
or like this. Then you apply it and you get there. But if it's that or, you know, you're an animal, then the whole point is what's this? Where are you? Because if it's a problem, that means you're not there, you're somewhere lower. How can you identify that? Do you know the science? Apply it, then you can move forward. That's not being discussed or taught. So for most, it is a compromise. But for us, we're just being realistic about where one's situated and what is the system to get there. So it's two different approaches. So we don't care where you are in the range as long as you can identify it and be progressive. So we're not dropping standards. We're establishing standards. But the point is the standard's only as good as the process to get there. You don't give the process, then how will it be valued? Does that make sense? So that's why nowadays it's thought compromise has to be done. We never have to compromise. It's Krishna's creation. Why do we have to compromise? Point is it's mentality. You can compromise your mentality. We don't need to do that. You know, it's all about Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. Shall I end here?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Vidaya Gaura Premanandini.